Greetings, everyone. Welcome back, as always, to the Adventures in Advising podcast. This is Matt Markin, and we are at episode 98, just a couple episodes away from our 100th episode. Today's a fun episode for me. We get to not only bring back a previous guest, but also get to welcome a new guest and someone I've gotten to know over the last year. So let's get to it. Returning is Dr. Michael Sersosimo, Director of Student Success within the School of Education at Loyola Marymount University. Last time Michael was on the podcast was way back in episode 16, titled Mentoring and Transitions, which actually is a very fitting title for a topic we're going to talk about today. So Michael, great to have you back on the podcast.
Yeah, thanks, Matt. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, and making her Adventures in Advising podcast debut is Regine Pasqua, Academic Advisor and Junior Faculty Specialist at the Manoa Advising Center at the University of Hawaii at Manoa. And also, I got to be Ray's mentor in the mentoring program within Nakata Region 9. Ray, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Matt. Thank you for having me today.
So you both recently came from off the heels of conferences that you were attending, NASPA and also the Nakata Region 9 and CalCAN conference. So Ray, I'm going to throw this first question to you. How was the NASPA conference and what did you get to present on?
Yeah. So this was actually my first time attending a NASPA annual conference. So that was really awesome. It was really big, slightly overwhelming, but it was really cool to connect with some new people and connect with some people from the past as well. So even though it was my first conference, I actually got involved with quite a bit. So I presented my first national conference presentation there. It was on growing up poor, trauma throughout the life stages. So I talked about just trauma, especially with poverty and how that impacts our student success. And then outside of doing my presentation, I was also a part of the planning committee for our APEX, so for Asian Pacific Islanders and Professional Excellence pre-conference. So that was really cool too, to kind of help guide that conversation and help others connect to one another. So overall, it's been like a really great experience. And I got to see Seattle and visit Pites Market. So that was an extra bonus.
Nice. And how was it like after you got done with your presentation? Did it feel like a lot of stress lifted? Like what was your feeling like?
Yeah, it felt like I definitely could just like finally relieve that relief of sigh that it was done. As Matt knows, I had been stressing about it for quite a few months beforehand and trying to make sure it was kind of quote unquote perfect. And I was really nervous in regards to like imposter syndrome, if I was going to do well with the topic, and to finally have it done and people seemed overall happy with it, I was like, relief. We did that. That was the first time. And it honestly wasn't that bad. I thought 15 minutes was going to last forever, but 50 minutes goes by so fast. It's kind of wild.
Yes, absolutely. And Michael, how was your time at the Nakata Region 9 conference and what did you present on?
Yeah, I mean, so Nakata, you know, Region 9, the CalCAN conference, it was great. You know, I've made a habit of trying to go every year. I think I've been to every region conference since 2016. So, you know, it's always a great opportunity to, you know, reconnect with colleagues that really can't see unless you're at a conference just because of geographic challenges. So that, you know, that piece is always nice. And, you know, I've been able to build a lot of great relationships with, you know, fellow Nakata members during that time. You know, I'm currently serving as the professional development coordinator for Region 9 in Nakata. And one of the main responsibilities for that role is to oversee the mentoring program that we have that we just launched this past year that you and Ray were both a part of. And, you know, so the presentations, most of them that I did, I did it on the mentoring programs that we had. We had one that was more through the executive office where they talk about a number of different mentoring opportunities as a Nakata member. So, you know, talked about the program in that sense and also had a couple of participants share their experiences during that session. And then I also did another panel with on the mentoring program where I presented some of the data that we've collected in the first year and, you know, had a panel of participants, again, talking about some of their experiences in the program. So, you know, hearing from all those individuals that, you know, were in those sessions was just so great to hear how impactful the program has been in only a year. I think there's always room for improvement. But at the same time, I think I was kind of just blown away at how much people really got out of it. So, you know, those are really impactful sessions for me to be able to do. And then I did mix it up and do another presentation too with some colleagues talking about helping undergraduates transition to graduate school. So that was kind of just a nice change of pace panel that we did with some colleagues in Region 9. It wasn't all mentoring program, but I mean, I definitely, it was a very mentoring program heavy conference, which again, I don't think is a bad thing, because I think we're just really proud in Region 9 to have that program. And again, we wanted to celebrate it and also just acknowledge how impactful and how much positivity it brought to so many members across the region.
Yeah, and I know we'll jump into some of those questions about the mentoring program. So it's a great giving a good foundation of what this topic will be about today. But of course, this is Adventures in Advising, so we always want to know about everyone's path into advising. So Ray, talk to us about your journey into higher ed.
Yeah, so I'm going to kind of start backwards in undergrad because I feel like it kind of contributes to my story of getting into higher education. So I'm a first generation college student. And right after graduating high school, my family decided to come back to Hawaii because this is where my mom was born and raised. And then I kind of walked in that day and was like, hey, I want to go to college here, but I have no idea like how to get started. And I remember her name. Her name is Danielle. She helped me with the application, like step by step to fill it all out. And that's how I got started with my undergrad journey. And then like the next step was then connecting with someone named Summer, who introduced me to like different student organizations on campus. And that's where I got really involved with student government, which then led me to my next mentor, whose name was Lexer. And she was someone that I always like aspired to be, but I had no idea that her job was a job, essentially. I thought she was like this person that received the golden ticket, and that's how she became a student life coordinator. So I never really questioned how she got there. And then when I transferred to my university, I met with Rowell, who is a part of NASPA. Specifically, he oversaw the NUF program, so the NASPA Undergraduate Fellowship Program. And he recognized me from my community college experience, and then I naturally applied for student leadership positions once I got to my university. And he's like, hey, like, you're super involved all the time. Have you ever just considered working in higher education before? And I was like, no, like, what is that? Like, what do you mean? And he's like, well, that's what I do, right? Like, you don't think this is a career? And I was like, no, I just never really thought of that as you working a job, just kind of you wanting to hang out with us for fun, for whatever reason. But from him connecting me through NUF, that's when I got to participate with a NASPA undergraduate internship. And then I also did the Dungy Leadership Institute. And those two experiences kind of helped solidify, like, okay, this is really the path that I want to be on for higher education. So then I, you know, went through the steps for applying for graduate school. And while I was writing my paper and thinking about, like, why do I want to be in higher ed, I really thought back to all those different people who like kind of shoulder tapped me or like helped me with my application. And so my main thing was to ultimately become like a resource. And then once I got more into, well, it took me a while to actually get into academic advising exactly, just because my GA-ship was in leadership. So my first position was a student life like coordinator position with a little bit of advising mixed in. With that little bit of advising, I was like, hey, this is something I actually really want to do. It also flashed back to my like undergrad years too for being an advising, a peer advisor. So I was like, let me try to like build upon this a little bit more. And I went back to my grad institution and got my first like formal advising position as a career and academic advising coach. And then I had some like personal medical problems while I was in Florida. So with that, I was kind of like, I really want to come back to Hawaii. And it's also just really in alignment of like what I was always taught for being a professional. So then I went on that journey to figure out how I can get back there. But in my advising like kind of realm, I decided to build upon my why for just being a resource, but to also be a resource specifically for people from underrepresented communities and lower socioeconomic statuses, because I feel like those were always the hard parts when it came to like navigating higher education. So that way, by providing them those resources, they can eventually grow either personally and professionally. So that way they can become social change leaders in their own communities as well.
Yeah. And of course you're able to give your experience, you know, going kind of navigating all of that as well. And how hard was it? Was it an easy decision, hard decision, leaving from Florida to going back to Hawaii?
Yeah, I would say yes and no. It was very like layered decision. So I was definitely starting to like build more of a community in Florida. But ultimately I decided that like lifestyle wise and then just being closer to family kind of outruled trying to just make it work in Florida and feel like that sense of, I guess, wholeness while I was there. And thankfully I have a really supportive partner who had always wanted to live in Hawaii anyways. So when he came out from vacationing and he was also sold too, and I was like, hey, well then like, let's actually try to make this work and like come back if we feel like it's going to make like our lifestyles better and just make us happier overall. And yeah, so it was really nice. It worked out ultimately.
That's awesome. And Michael, of course, listeners can go back if they haven't and listen to episode 16, but things have also kind of, other things have happened to you since then. So can you kind of give us your story as well?
Sure. From just an abbreviated version from the beginning or?
Sure. Why not?
Well, I mean, I'll be brief because you mentioned you definitely can, you know, listen to episode 16. It's crazy that actually it's been that long ago. But, you know, I'm similar to Ray. I should always like to acknowledge, I mean, I'm a first generation student myself, and my career in higher education was not planned by any means. I had no intention to go into higher education when I was an undergraduate, and I would have never imagined that happening. My bachelor's degree is in, you know, film production. I have a, you know, BFA in film production, which I know we talked about in the last episode, and that's kind of tied into how my mentoring aspect of my life, which still exists. You know, I do a lot of volunteer work, mentor kids on the weekends, teaching them how to make movies and all that. But I, you know, worked in the film industry for a bit after I finished my undergrad, and for a number of different reasons, I decided that it wasn't how I wanted to spend the rest of my life, and I wasn't really just happy with the person that I was at that moment. And I was figuring out, well, what's next? What's the best option? I really just always resonate, I think, with this mentoring aspect, like helping. And I looked at Loyola Marymount University. You know, they had a counseling program for a master's degree. And, you know, I learned a little bit more about that and decided to enroll in that program. And that really began my journey, you know, at LMU, which was all the way back in, you know, 2009. So I, you know, came to LMU to, you know, get my master's and started working as a graduate assistant. You know, I initially thought I may do more of like school counseling, but I realized that the K-12 school system just wasn't what I thought was the best fit for me. And I was working at LMU as a graduate assistant. So I really didn't, you know, like the higher ed setting. So I focused on that. I dropped like my credential to become a school counselor and focused on that. And, you know, that led me to shortly after I finished my master's to, you know, get a job at LMU as just a, what's called a senior administrative coordinator. So it had nothing to do with advising or anything, really just an opportunity to get my foot in the door. I probably was overqualified for the position. But, you know, it was an opportunity to, I needed a job. And I just thought it was like, hey, you know, I really like this institution. So, you know, did that for a few years, and then I was ultimately had an opportunity to become an advisor, you know, mostly working with undergraduates pursuing careers in teaching. So I did that for a while. And then I started about 6 years after that, around like 2020, right before the pandemic, I started working more with like traditional graduate students and some of our like counseling, school psychology, higher education administration programs. You know, did that. And then I, you know, this past, you know, about 6 months ago or so, back in like October of, you know, 2023, opportunity finally came up for me to become a director of student success in the School of Education, which was just, it was a culmination of a journey that started so long ago. And I was ready for the move to administration. And it's been very eye-opening. But, you know, that's, I just have found a home at LMU. I've been here full time for 12 years. And, you know, I really do enjoy the work and the institution and the students. And so a lot of things just fell into place. You know, life just happens. And but I definitely was not like somebody that was like, oh, I want to work in higher education or I want to be an advisor. Not that too many people ever say that when they're younger anyway. Right. I think that's always like a running joke of for those of us in academic advising. But yeah, it's been great. And like I said, it's been being in this role, it's been a lot, but it's I'm ready for the challenge, and it's been a lot of learning, but it's been a lot of fun too.
And I guess that's a good segue into the next question, which is to learn more about, you know, your current roles and what that all entails. So, Michael, let's start with you.
Sure. Well, I mean, I'm the director of student success in the School of Education, as you noted in the beginning of the episode. I oversee our academic advisors in the School of Education and our credential office, because a lot of our students are pursuing licensures to become teachers, counselors, school administrators. So I oversee those two units. That really is the umbrella of student success in the School of Education. So supporting that work and, you know, leading those efforts of trying to basically enhance the student experience at LMU and for the school, in the School of Education. I also work closely with, faculty on certain areas like, academic programs. So if they're doing like revisions to their program, I do provide some support through that. Or if, like doing my stuff with like course scheduling or our bulletin. So it's not like strictly just academic advising that I do in this role. I mean, but that's a huge component of it. And that's obviously my expertise. But, I do a lot of work with faculty, and I work closely with an associate dean to work with the faculty and the program directors on a lot of those areas too. But, like I was mentioning, being that I'm still new to the role, I'm a big believer in not doing too many drastic changes too quickly. So I'm still like really in this learning and understanding phase of the work that I'm doing. So I'm really just trying to understand more from like that organizational lens and the director lens. And that's been one kind of cool thing about being recently at the Nakata conference even is, I had an opportunity to hear even just some administrators and like one of the networking sessions. And it's just like nice to like, it's interesting to hear from individuals that are more seasoned of how they approach things. So I'm hoping to like build those relationships more too with the work that I'm doing. But yeah, those are like the main areas of the work. So there's a lot of other things, I mean, that come up. Of course, when you're an administrator, you get emails all the time. I'm sure when I open my email after this recording, I'll probably have a bunch of things that come up, up that I have to take care of today. But again, that's, part of the work. And in some respects, kind of the enjoyable part too.
So Ray, how about you? What's going on at University of Hawaii at Manoa?
Yeah, so I work specifically in our Manoa Advising Center. So our center is dedicated to supporting exploratory students and certain pre-major students as well. So I would say with our department, we have several different exploratory pathways underneath it. And then our population of students really varies. So some students actually know exactly what they want to pursue for their major, but they need to just meet the school our college's admissions requirements to get into the program formally. And then some students are truly exploratory. So it's a lot more of like a major exploration conversation every appointment to figure out like what makes the most sense. What are your goals? Is it for some students, right? If they're in the upperclassmen like range, sometimes the goal more so becomes like, I just need to graduate with a degree, help me find something. And then for more of our like freshman, sophomore class students, it is about like, let me see everything. Let's keep having this discussion and talk about all of my interest areas. So that's been really fun to help navigate those conversations with them and see like what makes sense for like their future careers. And then within the office, outside of advising, I oversee two major kind of like projects. The first one is being the front desk supervisor. So I just actually recently hired on two front deskies, which I was really happy about going through that full process. And then the second part is our mandatory advising. So for our UH Manoa students, what we have them do is come in to meet with an advisor so that way they can talk about how their current semester is going and then also the next semester is going. And they have the opportunity to speak with either our office or another advising unit's office to get their hold like removed. And there's a couple of other options too listed within there for our students. And then we have all their holds go active before registration. Again, kind of trying to push them to get in and make sure that they're taking classes that's going to keep them on track. Because as we all know in the advising realm, sometimes students will take a class way out of left field thinking that it will count for their requirements when it doesn't. So to help mitigate that problem so that way it doesn't happen so often. That's why we do the mandatory advising. And then for the other part with my title, so full title is Academic Advisor, Junior Faculty Specialist. I will first say caveat, the University of Hawaii is reclassifying for their faculty, but essentially there are several different faculty positions under that classification. So you have your traditional instructional faculty, your research faculty, librarians, and then myself as a specialist. So there's different like categories that we have to meet within that. So outside of our professional activity, so doing the formal advising, my mandatory advising, and front desk supervisor, I have my scholarly contributions, hence why I went to NASPA just a few weeks ago to do that and do our presentation. And the last part is the volunteering. So becoming a lot more involved with our different professional organizations like NACADA. So that's been interesting to learn a little bit more about, because similar to Michael, I'm fairly new to my position. I came on in June of last year. So the first semester was a lot of training, right? Learning all the different programs, and similarly not making tons of changes. And then this semester doing like very small changes, such as like, how are we going to change the signup forms for mandatory advising? How are we going to do interviews for our front desk student staff? And that's just because as you're on the faculty track, in that 5 years, you have to have 2 contract renewals, and then your official promotion and tenure comes up at the 5th year. So my contract renewal is coming for this year. So that's why, even though I was hesitant to make some changes, it's like, yeah, I make a little bit of changes here and there. So I can, yeah, monitor that for data and stuff.
Yeah. So both of you newer to your roles, but also have a lot on your plates taking care of the day to day. And just me personally, it's great to know you both. And over the years, Ray over the last year, and Michael for many, many years. Michael and I got to connect at, one of the region conferences, and then we've kind of been friends ever since. So it's all great. Everything that you've been doing at NACADA and NASPA and presenting and what you do at your institution. So definitely keep it up. I was talking about having full plates, but one of the other things you've both been part of has been the pilot of the NACADA Region 9 mentoring program. And yes, granted, there's been a lot of mentoring programs throughout different regions in NACADA, other organizations, but that would be great to have you both on to chat about that. And so, Michael, as the coordinator of the professional development quarter within Region 9, what was the process like creating a mentoring program? I know, the previous PD chair or coordinator, Maria Domingo, kind of started it, and then you came on to then take over from there. So what was that process like?
Yeah, I mean, it was a lot of work, but I do want to give props definitely to Maria, because she did a lot of the groundwork, and I mentioned that at the conference recently. It really was such an essential part of the work. I mean, her creating the subcommittee and doing some of the research, it helped that we didn't have to start from scratch. I became the professional development coordinator for Region 9 in March of 2023, so it's been a year. And, it was helpful to have that base already, but, coming in though, it was still a lot of work that we had to do, because, our big goal was to try to launch it before, I know when one of your goals as the region chair previously was to create a mentoring program. And I know we were trying to launch it before you termed out, and not just specifically for you, but we were like, we got to get this off the ground. So we set a date of let's get it going for the summer. Let's plan to launch it then. So, there was a lot of work just trying to get the applications and, create some of the assessments. And I also want to give major props to a lot of the other region mentoring programs, because I reached out to a number of those colleagues across NACADA, and, so many of them are so helpful, just sharing resources of oh yeah, we use this for an application, or we use this for a pre and a post survey. And it wasn't I'm not giving this to you because it's our regions and not, yours. And I mean, I always try to do my best to give them credit for it. I mean, I never claim to claim that Region 9's created everything from scratch, because, we definitely borrowed a lot from other regions to help us. I mean, we tweaked it to meet the needs of our region, of course, but it was helpful to have a lot of great people that were willing to, again, like help and, you know, get that off the ground. So, but yeah, we spent a couple months though last spring to you know, finalize a lot of things and get the application out. And we were, again, ultimately able to get it out. Like, I forget if we sent it out in like May or June last year, but we sent it out over the summer with the idea of getting it, you know, officially launched. And we have the orientation in September. So, you know, we did only have, the pilot wasn't a full year, which, you know, had its challenges, but I'm just glad that we were able to launch it when we did, because even though it was an abbreviated time frame, it still, again, like, was very impactful for the people that did, you know, participate. You know, we had 41 people do the pilot, so we had 22 mentees and 19 mentors. So a few of the mentors agreed graciously to do two mentees, which is, you know, which is doesn't seem like a big deal, but, you know, that's a heavy ask. And I mean, like, but those people were, at least from what I heard, you know, able to make it work. So, you know, again, like, hats off to those individuals especially. But overall, though, again, like, it was great to have them participate and for us to have that. And, you know, now be, I think almost every region in NACADA has a mentoring program, which is great. So I'm glad. Now, Region 9, we lead the way in a lot of things, but for, you know, the mentoring program, we were, you know, a little behind on that. But hey, you know, it's no shame in that at all. And I'm glad, again, we have one, and we're going to keep, you know, chugging along and keep it going even long after I term out as a professional development coordinator a year from now.
I mean, that's always the goal, is that you don't want it to end. You want it to keep going. I mean, yeah, when I was Region 9 chair, what I ran on, one of the things was, hey, we're going to create a mentoring program. I didn't know how. I was like, but then it was, hey, Maria, can you start looking into this? And then, hey, Michael, can you take it from there? So, I mean, really kudos to you with everything that you had to do. I mean, yes, you had your subcommittee, but a lot of the work, I know how much you were involved in it to get it off the ground. And yes, I was very happy. The pilot started before I ended my term as region chair. I mean, I know I played it as a mentor. I know for me, it was one of those decisions of like, should I not? Ray was talking about imposter syndrome, about presenting. And then for me, I also had imposter syndrome about, am I even a mentor? You know, I think of, you know, I'm an academic advisor. I don't want to be in any management position. I don't see myself in that. But I know for some titles can kind of be a thing. And I was like, well, there's that imposter syndrome of like, if I don't have that title of director or assistant director or coordinator or something, should I be doing that? But it was also like, well, I've been in NACADA for so many years. You know, is this a way also for me to give back? And I was cycling off the Region 9 role as chair. So I was like, well, I don't really have many official things I'm doing. So time-wise, you know, I would have some time to devote to this. So that was kind of some of my reasons to apply. But Ray, I wanted to kind of throw this question to you as applying as a mentee. You know, what was your decision process like to say, you know what, let me fill this out and see if I can be part of this program?
So I really just wanted to learn about everything that NACADA had to offer. So as I mentioned earlier, I was like fairly new still to like the advising aspect of higher education. So there is a lot of theories once I especially got into this role now with UH Manoa that the advisors were kind of just casually throwing out around the office, regardless from like advising theories to actual just like, well, student affairs theories, I was fine. But the advising theory aspect, I was like, like, how do you all know this information? And they kept being like, well, look at NACADA, pull up this on this website. And they were also like heavily involved. And it was kind of like an eye opener to me, because outside of NASPA, I didn't really realize that there were other higher educational like professional organizations, especially for like the different functional areas underneath higher education. So to start learning a little bit from them, I was like, I have to learn more about this organization. And then it worked out because then the email naturally went out for the mentorship program. So I was like, oh, perfect. Let me go ahead and sign up for that just to like get start somewhere, even though slightly was also nervous because I was like, what happens if they question it? Like, how did you get an advising job and now you need like mentorship and you don't know anything about NACADA? But then I realized it was actually pretty common for people not to know too much about NACADA or ways to get involved. So overall, I was really happy about my experience for being, or that I chose to sign up for the mentorship program, and then like my overall experience this past like year.
Yeah, I mean, I think for me, same thing when I started as an advisor, it was like my director at the time was always talking about Nakata. And I was like, what's this Nakata thing? You know, and then I got to go to my first conference. I felt so overwhelmed because I had come from admissions and really had more of the transactional pieces in that role. And so it was such an eye opener of like, what did I get myself into being an advisor and now going to this conference where everyone seems to know what they're doing and they're talking about all these advising theories and approaches. And I really just had to like set, I need to start learning some of this and reading it up on articles and books and all of that. But in your office, you actually have two people I know that I consider friends. There's Matt Ng and also Megumi Makino Kanahiro who work in that office. So I can imagine both of them are like, yeah, check this site, go here and talk to this person or whatever, you know, whoever, whatever questions you might have, everything can relate to Nakata. But Ray, when you started the program, did you have any sort of expectations or what was like your first impressions when you started in the program?
Yeah, so I went in just kind of only wanting to learn about the resources. And then I saw Michael's email prepping us in advance for the first session of like, what is your goal? And that's when I kind of paused of like, what is my goal? Because I don't know a lot about the organization itself, like what it has to offer. So I kind of laid into like my position itself, especially with those different kind of requirements I need to meet for the faculty track specifically. And I made that become like my goal to talk about. And I was like, maybe if I just like bring up like the fact that I have to do scholarly contributions and I have volunteering that I need to do too, that my mentor will know about certain resources and start just casually connecting me. And it worked out honestly really well. And it's funny that you mentioned Matt and Megumi because they asked me advance. They're like, oh, who is your mentor? And I was like, oh, I got Matt, Mark. And then they're like, oh my gosh, you're in like the best hands. He's going to connect you to all the resources. He is like Nakata. And that's been very true. You've like helped me tremendously to learn about like the DEI position that I was recently selected for. So that's been really fun. And then just getting more involved like through the weekly announcements to participate with the different advising groups and their topics just to like start somewhere. And then the second part with the expectation was just to have someone that I can also talk to about problems either personally or professionally that was outside of my institution, so that way they can give me that other perspective. And again, major kudos to Matt, because we have talked about that in regards to like some of the things I've have found challenging as a young professional, and then even like my goals for the future and how I'll reach them, and kind of just like those different barriers that I see as challenges along the way. So it's been really nice to have that, just again, that outside party that I can speak with about all this and not have it be like, well, yes, I understand your challenges, but you still need to meet the marks of like XYZ things. Because I feel like sometimes that can be kind of hard within like our actual institutions itself, just to, you know, let it go and like, again, take that off your chest a little bit and just vent it out with someone else.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Cracking the college admissions code just got easier. I'm Rebecca Gordon, your go-to fictional college admissions counselor for the rich and famous. Tune into The Admissions Game, Satire Edition, and uncover my top secrets for surefire Ivy League admission. Ditch the old Photoshop your face onto a water polo hunk trick. We reveal all the latest loopholes. So laugh and learn with The Admissions Game wherever you podcast.
Yeah, I will tell you this. I don't think I've told you this, but I was really nervous about our first meeting, you know, because for me, I was like, I don't know. What if the mentee has interests that I know nothing about? And am I going to be able to help this person, you know, or are they going to be like, this is not going to work out. I don't want to be part of this program now, thanks to Matt. But luckily, yeah, however the matching went, and, you know, we'll chat with Michael after this. But, you know, to me, I was so glad after that first meeting, because I was like, wow, Ray just seems like an amazing person. I think we have so many commonalities, similar paths in a way. some similar interests. And you just seem so open to, like, I want to learn more, you know, maybe hear some areas, but it wasn't like specifically, I want to learn more about this or this. Those came like later on in our meeting, our monthly meetings. But it was like, I just really kind of want to take it little by little, you know, and then kind of build a solid foundation instead of trying to take everything at once. And I think for me, that like calmed me down where I'm like, okay, I don't need to like race to, you know, find this resource or whatnot. Like, we can literally work on one aspect at a time. So Michael, for you coordinating this, can you share in terms of like once applications came in, like what was the process like with matching? And then if there's any comments or anything that you've heard from other mentors and mentees about the program?
Yeah, I mean, it's funny. Somebody asked that this question on one of the panels we were doing, because they were joking. Like, they're like, what information do you have that, you know, like, do you have a secret database or some like secret, you know, magic or that, you know, to help do the matching? And I, you know, it's not a, really not much. I mean, when I looked at the spreadsheet, you know, the applications, you know, I just was trying to do my best to like match people up based on like things that they, you know, had in common, or, you know, maybe they had a goal that they both had and, you know, that they wanted to accomplish. It's hard to match. I mean, cause sometimes you think when you're matching someone, you think you have like a great match and then it doesn't work out. And then other times you're like, I'm not sure about this match, and it works out perfectly fine. I think a lot of times it comes down to the flexibility of the pairing and being open to different ideas and directions of where you may go based on your initial meetings and goal setting and all that. But, you know, I'm sure that some matches didn't work out that well. And, you know, we got some feedback that I know some people were struggling with, like goal setting and just like they didn't know what to talk about and all of that. But it's, you know, some of those challenges are hard to, no matter what the match is. I mean, because you have to kind of, again, go into it with an open mind and really being able to just, again, like be flexible and adapt and all of that. But I, you know, like I would look though, when I did the matching, like I would, sometimes it would even be like a personal thing. Like I was sharing again this at like the panel, like if two people were like really passionate about, I don't know, like fantasy novels or something, sometimes even though that may sound like silly, that connection can be like, you can really like, oh wow, like you really like this. And, you know, and then you start like having these conversations, and well, if that's like a surface level connection in a lot of ways, it can really like open the door to have like deeper connections longer term too, because then you get comfortable. You're able to like say like, oh yeah, well, this person really likes, I don't know, like Lord of the Rings or something, you know, or Star Wars or, you know, whatever. And it's like, you're more open to talking about more professional related goals and aspirations. So, because like shared identity and mentoring is so important, and sometimes that shared identity can be something like that. I mean, I did my dissertation on that, on mentoring and shared identities. I was looking more at like first generation, but I remember some of the interviews and the data that I collected about how impactful that could even be, just of like, again, like creating that space and having those like, you know, shared interests and, you know, and all that. So that was like part of like how I approached the matching. And again, like I know I wasn't batting 1,000 with it, but like I know, like based on the feedback, a lot of the matches were, they were like, I don't know how you did this. I couldn't imagine myself being with somebody else. And I was like, sure, I'll take credit for it. But I'm like, I know, I'm just trying my best here and trying to like make it work. So, you know, I was happy with it, and I'm hoping that year two has similar results with that. But it's not like an exact science by any means of how that worked. But yeah, that's kind of the method behind the madness.
Well, I would say take the credit. I mean, you, whatever method you use, you ended up matching everyone together. So, you know, I think with Ray and I, we didn't plan out all the meetings. We did them like month to month. So it was right. Like we had our initial meeting, and that was kind of like, it was before the orientation. So it was like, let's just take half an hour and just get to know one another. And then you know, kind of connect where we can. And then it was, all right, based off our different schedules and what might be peak times for one or the other or both, what would be the next time we'll meet? And then we kind of scheduled it and then did that the next meeting and so forth. And at least for me, I think it worked out. I don't know how you feel, Ray.
Yeah, I literally like the format of like how we create our timeline for meeting as mentor and mentee. It just seems very like seamless and like worked well for us, honestly. And then it was always really fun once it hit like the beginning of the month, because that's typically, right, you would say when it would land, it is the beginning of the month. Yeah. Because every time with Matt and I's conversation, we didn't expect it to just like take up the full hour. Like it would be the end of the hour and it's like, oh no.
Yeah, that's so true. Yeah, because initially we'd be like, hey, how are you and how are you? And then we just start chatting and then it would just go from one conversation to another. And then we're like, oh yeah, we got 10 minutes left. We should start talking about like goals and things.
Right, exactly. Make sure to schedule that next one. Last minute scramble.
But I thought that, yeah, I mean, yeah, the way we had the timeline, I think definitely worked. And then we were flexible in case like something happened, and, you know, some other priority, you know, took precedence. It was like, all right, we need to cancel, but let's schedule. But one of the things we did too is even like we would schedule the next meeting, but it was like, okay, what's the goal that we need to accomplish between now and our next meeting? Like, what will be the next topic we'll talk about? You know, Ray had a lot of ideas, you know, and I'm happy to say, like, I think you accomplished all of them, but we kind of wanted to focus on like one goal at a time, or, you know, what was coming up sooner that needed to get done, and then kind of discussed, is it something that, you know, needs to be done now? Can it be later? Is it a goal that you have for this mentoring program? Or maybe that's a goal for next year or something. But Ray, you were kind of mentioning the DEI. I was wondering if you can share with listeners about some of the all the goals that you actually had, and if you feel you accomplished those.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
You love listening to podcasts, but have you ever thought about starting your own podcast? Maybe you want to build a brand, grow your business, or are looking for an excuse to talk about your favorite hobby. Whatever your reason for making a podcast, Buzzsprout is the place to start. Since 2009, Buzzsprout has helped over 300,000 people launch their own podcasts. Buzzsprout walks you step by step through the whole process and will give you powerful tools to start, grow, and monetize your podcast. Ready to get started? Click the link in the show notes to get our free step-by-step guide to starting your podcast today.
Yeah, there were quite a bit of goals when you mentioned that. I was like, that's a good point. Because we did start off just very casually with each other. Like, I just want to know about Nakata. So I would definitely say that goal was met in the sense of like what ways I could get involved. And then from there, after learning what the opportunities were, that's when I did bring up the goal of like, well, how do I now formally apply for one of these positions? And then Matt kind of like broke down like, what is that kind of like nomination election process like? And then what are the responsibilities once you are in those type of positions? So that way I had a really solid understanding, so I felt comfortable enough to pursue it. And yeah, that really worked well. And then when it came to presenting, that was another goal that more so came up probably the midpoint of the fall semester once I saw it come out. And I was like, hey, like I've always wanted to do a conference presentation. I think I'm gonna like try to shoot my shot at this. What do you think? And then was 100% supportive and like helped me talk out like different topics, ways to like set up a conference presentation. And then the last goal that I guess still is in works is to eventually publish. So Matt introduced me to like our different journals and then the timeline for publishing. So that one's like in the works, but I feel like would be accomplished at some point, hopefully this year, finger crossed.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to reading that too, whenever it does get published. And then I guess Michael, as coordinator, you know, now that the pilot's done, you know, you're starting cohort two, any takeaways about the mentoring program, you know, whether as a coordinator, what others have said, anything else to add?
Yeah, I mean, I think one thing that we are trying to do more in year two is provide a little more resources on like goal setting and just a bit more structure. But I'm always hesitant, though, to like have too much structure, because I think you have to like find that balance, because some of the you know, mentees in the program, you know, like Ray was sharing, I mean, those are amazing goals to have. And then there's others that are in the program that just are really just looking for like a sounding board from another institution, because they either work in a really small team or they're just really new to the profession. So, you know, I don't want there to ever be like expectations of like, oh, you have to accomplish this or that. You know, we had a lot of mentees that did like present, whether it was at, you know, NACADA or NASPA or some other professional association, or, you know, we have two mentees from here from the first year, the pilot, are now on the steering committee, you know, Ray and another colleague. So like, you know, that's pretty cool. And I'm not saying that the mentoring program is the sole reason why they're involved and accomplished all those things, but you know, maybe that was allowed them to get that final like push to go for it. But I think though, like, the point is though, like, you know, we're trying to provide more resources with that, but like, I know, you know, we don't want to set an expectation that you have to do X, Y, Z. I mean, we really want the mentee to lead and collaborate with the mentor on what works best for what they're trying to accomplish when they're in the program. So, you know, you can't keep everyone happy. And in some respects, when you do these programs, because some people are like, oh, I really like the flexibility a lot. And others are like, I need like a lot of direction or, you know, so, but I think, you know, that's been something we're trying to continue to navigate. But I mean, like, I think overall though, the feedback has been very positive. I mean, like when we did the post, you know, program survey, which I mean, didn't have a really strong response rate. I mean, we're a little over 50%, which I will acknowledge. I would have liked to have seen it a little bit higher, but we still, like, when we asked, like, the overall, like, what was your overall experience in the mentoring program? I mean, 85% said, you know, excellent or very good, like, you know, the 4 and 5 on the scale. So predominantly people, like, really enjoyed it. I mean, we only had a few that didn't give that overwhelming positive, which, I mean, I want people to be honest, just to be clear. But, you know, like, I was a little nervous. I was like, oh gosh, what if we get a lot of like, you know, poor, like, you know, for like their experience, but that was not the case. So, I did acknowledge too, though, at the conference, and just like, as we look at the data, that maybe the individuals that had negative experiences elected to not fill out the surveys. So there could be some skewed data like related to that. And I know that's another piece of feedback that we're trying to look at as a subcommittee of like, how do we identify the attrition in the program, or at least trying to find like if people like weren't really able to participate. I think everybody goes into this with good intentions, but life happens sometimes. You know, you get a new role, maybe you leave higher education altogether, or, you know, like just get too busy, whether it's professional related, personal related, whatever it may be. We don't really know how many of those 41 people that I mentioned earlier actually finished out the program. I mean, well, most of them I truly believe do, but I mean, that's an assumption to a point. But I think we're trying to find a way to identify that like throughout the program. So like we can maybe provide additional support if somebody is struggling or like there's, you know, unresponsiveness or whatever it may be, because we have a smaller group for year two. So I think that might make things a little bit easier. We have 24 participants, you know, 12 mentees and 12 mentors. So, but I also don't view that as a negative, because I'm more concerned about quality over quantity. Like, I don't think we need like a huge program. I mean, I would have maybe liked to have seen it a little bit bigger, but I'm not like losing any sleep over that. I'm really more focused on those that want to do it, that are going to get a lot of out of it. And again, like be impactful to whatever their goals may be. But yeah, there's some things that, you know, well, I'm sure they're going to again have to be addressed even after I term out next year. And I'd love to stay on the subcommittee and support my successor and try to, you know, like keep it going. But that will be more of their, not their problem, but that'll be more of their work that they'll have to lead and try to do. But the goal, of course, is sustainability, which I do think there's definitely like no reason that that can't happen.
Yeah, I think the way it's set up, it's sustainable. And it's something that doesn't have a cost to it. And right. I think this is also everything that you've shared today regarding the program, I think is something that whether it's another organization or whether it's at an institution, there's a foundation, there's there's information here that could be used to create, you know, something and take what they've learned here and create it at their institution, their department, or whatever it might be. But with time, Ray, I'll give you the last question here. You know, now that you've gone through the program, you know, what's next for you, whether it's, you know, in higher ed in general or within Nakata? And, you know, I'm sure part of that answer is the DEI coordinator.
Yeah, so definitely for upcoming is just focusing on the DEI coordinator position, make sure I can do that well in the steering committee, and then hopefully going to either the regional next year or the annual as well for the conference. And then professionally, it's really just getting involved in an academic program to start pursuing my PhD. Yeah, that's pretty much it for where I'm at right now. Yeah.
Which is still going to be a lot of work with all of that, but I know you can handle all of it. But I also hope that, you know, both of you too, with your new roles and everything, taking time for yourself as well and not overdo it. But I appreciate you both being on the podcast. Michael, Ray, pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.